I invite you to take your Bibles and turn to James chapter 4, and we'll read verses 13 through 17. As I read over that, a verse that stuck out to me was verse 17. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Looking back a few verses before that, if you look at verse 4, the latter part of the verse said, whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. Put those two verses together, and I don't believe anybody that's here would want to be in that position of either one of those two. Starting at verse 13 of James chapter 4. Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city, and continue there a year, and buy and sell and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live, and do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings, all such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good, and doeth it not, to him it is sin. With the reading of this portion of Scripture on our hearts and minds, let us kneel for prayer.
Say good evening to each of you, and I must confess, you have proven me wrong. I have made the statement today that I don't expect many to show up tonight, and I was pleasantly surprised. God bless you for being here. I don't plan to preach more than 2 hours. We do want you to get to the place you're scheduled so that you can see in the new year. Actually, I'm going to share a few thoughts that I did 10 years ago, but I'm going to keep it short. And I think it's appropriate, with the dawning of a new year just hours away, to reflect on the passing of time. Many people will be in Times Square watching a ball drop. There will be others in towns and cities watching certain objects drop. There will be people drinking themselves silly and thinking that they're having the grandest time of their life. And I even heard on the radio traveling to Virginia that there is some locality, and I didn't catch where, that it is illegal to fire a gun. And they sent out the warning that if anyone fires a gun, there's technology they have now that they will track them down. And they will be arrested or whatever. I thought that was kind of significant. Not that I'm against firing guns by any means. And I think there have been quite a few cracks at our house on occasion when New Year's comes into fruition. For a few moments tonight, we're going to look at a question that James poses, that Brother Mike read, and he asks a question: for what is your life? What is the answer to that question? It's a vapor. It's even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. The book of James is full of practical truths that are of value for us in our everyday Christian living. And one of the dangers of which James warns is found here in the last section of chapter 4. It is a sad waste of a very short lifespan to live our lives in pursuit of material pursuits and interests with the attitude that we are in control of our lives and what we plan to do in the future. Such a person basically lives with the idea that they will be here forever and is the master of their lives and their plans. Most likely, James was addressing the wealthy merchants who discussed their business deals and boasted of their plans for the coming year. So in verse 13, James says, "Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain." Their primary goal was making money in a different city for the coming year with no thought of responsibility to God who gave them the strength to work. There is no mention that they prayed seeking God's will for their venture. How foolish. How sad. We have no guarantee of the next day, much less of the next year. In the immediate context of verse 14, James addresses life's brevity, comparing it to a vapor or a mist that appears for a short time and then is gone. The word vapor in Greek is used as well in Acts 2, verse 19, to describe the clouds that will blanket the landscape due to the cataclysmic events that take place before the notable day of the Lord shall come. Acts 2:19 says, "And I will show wonders in the heaven above and signs in the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor of smoke." That vapor of smoke is something we can visualize when there are foggy conditions, for example. A few times a year, the day begins with a dense blanket of fog to the point where visibility is minimal. One strains to see as they drive in those conditions and usually proceeds at a slow rate of speed. But you know, as the morning wears on and the sun comes out, the rays burn that fog off, and in just a few short hours, it's completely gone with no evidence that it had existed just a time, short time before. James uses this analogy to describe our lifespan. What is your life? It is even a vapor. A tea kettle on the stove is another analogy that narrows of the period of time to a few seconds. You see that vapor come out of the tea kettle or the cooking pot, and it soon disappears. One of the questions I commonly ask those who reach 90 or 100 is if it seems like that long of a period of time. And most of the responses indicate that their life seems much shorter. Lord willing, my father will be 91 years old in April. And he told me a number of times that the 20-year period between 60 and 80 went faster than any other 20-year period of his life. I had to think, I'm now in that time frame, and I'm realizing what he experienced. I'm reminded of the poem I heard Brother Harold Martin share a number of times here at Pleasant Hill. "When as a child I laughed and wept, time crept. When as a youth I dreamed and talked, time walked. When I became a full-grown man, time ran. And later, as I older grew, time flew. Soon I shall find, while traveling on, time gone. 40 years ago, as a new father, I held in my arms and looked into the face of a newborn girl at York Hospital. It now only seems like a dream. I observed her delicate features, her tiny hands and fingers. Never once can I remember thinking about the future, that one day she would be a mother. Never once that night did I think that her potential children would be my grandchildren, and that I'd be a grandfather. My focus was on the present, and yet how quickly the present vanished into mere memories. Changes came one right after another. A little girl named Dina grew up quickly. Her toys have either been picked up and packed away or worn out and thrown away. The wagon rides, the story times, and the walks in the meadow are all just pleasant memories of the past. Let's consider the mist or the fog that James mentions that makes up our life, or the comparison to our life. From what is it made? Water. Two atoms of hydrogen and one atom of oxygen comprise each molecule. That water, dispersed in a superfine mist across the landscape, soon evaporates and becomes invisible. I find it fascinating that our life, our lifespan, is compared to a mist comprised of water that is soon gone. Most of the human body is made up of water. Our cells consist of anywhere from 65 to 90% water by weight. Take away the water content, and with time and decay, we literally become dust. What is your life? It's even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away. James mentions those who presume upon the future and make claims as if their life will continue without interruption, boasting of their own human capability. In verse 16, James says, "But now ye rejoice in your boastings. All such rejoicing is evil." It's proper to enjoy life and the good things God gives us for our enjoyment. But to think and boast about the fact that we will be continuing, and we make plans in that regard, James says that is evil, because we have no guarantee that our life will continue. Proverbs 27:1, we read, "Boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth." And so we know that every breath we breathe is a gift, a precious gift from God. Can you think back in your own life, for example, when you very well thought that possibly this would be your last breath, your last time on earth? There's a number of moments that come to mind, and the thoughts that go through one's mind. It's like they say, your life flashes before your mind. I remember coming home from Virginia. It was a Sunday afternoon, and I was driving when I was sleepy. That was not wise, and everybody else in the car was sleeping as well. The sun was beating in, and we were going through a construction zone there when they were redoing 30 and near New Oxford. And I got awake and found myself driving in the wrong lane, headed for another vehicle coming my direction. And there was not much distance between. Apparently, I had drifted over, and something woke me up. I really think it was the Lord. And I twisted that steering wheel, got back in the right lane in a split second, and all of a sudden I saw in front of me then a car stopped, dead, ready to turn. So I slammed on the brakes, and everyone went flying front and asked, what happened? But I still remember looking into the eyes of the oncoming driver as I suddenly got awake and realized this could be very serious. There was another time when I was swimming in the ocean and got caught in a riptide. And I thought, you know, am I ever going to get back to shore? Until I remembered you go parallel to the shoreline. We do not know. Sometimes we have a warning. Sometimes we don't. There are many reminders that we are only mortal. God controls our lives and the times of our existence. The businessmen to whom Jesus was referring were making plans for a whole year when they were not sure for what would take place in one day or even their next breath. We need to set long-range goals. That's proper. We need to make plans for our lives. But these goals need to be made with the awareness that it's up to God if we have the life and the strength to bring them to fruition. Because of the attitude that they could live and make plans and go forward thinking that they were going to live indefinitely, I think it parallels a parable that Jesus told in Luke 12 of the rich man who brought forth his ground, brought forth plentifully, and he said to himself, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. What could God say to him? Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then whose shall these things be which thou hast provided? And then the comparison is made by Jesus. So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Because of the attitude that he could live it up for years to come, the farmer was called into account by God. He had a temporal focus with a I will get all I can for myself mindset. You know, this parable is not just for farmers, by the way. It's for school teachers and little Debbie distributors and construction workers and clerks and doctors, truck drivers and executives, and we could go on. Saving resources for ourselves to enjoy in the future is not what life is all about. Life is about God and living for Him. When our soul is required of us, the only things that will be important as we cross that great divide from time into eternity are the things we sent on ahead. Those things that make us rich toward God. Time, energy, resources spent for the king. Of no significance will be what we left behind. Treasures laid up for ourselves. You know, the Laodiceans were blessed with material possessions, prosperity. And their reliance on earthly riches is what caused the rebuke of Christ in Revelation 3. And I had to think, the conditions for a similar trust in prosperity and in possessions exists in our time and in our country, probably more than it did for the Laodiceans in the first century. And I would venture to say that even those in this congregation, if you take the membership, we are enjoying a higher standard of living with all the conveniences and all the technology than the Laodiceans. And so the tendency for us to become materially preoccupied Christians is very great, to the point of sometimes selfishly enjoying our resources. You know, at times it's appropriate that we would take time to reflect and ponder some questions. It's good to take inventory, evaluate our pursuits, interests, and schedule. What is my life? What am I here for anyway? What is God's purpose for me? In my own mind, I know I'm here to serve the Lord, to glorify Him in all that I do. But then I have to ask, do all my activities demonstrate that? Does my lifestyle demonstrate that? You know, there's two ways of viewing life, and maybe we can all evaluate in which category we would actually be found. Let's call the first one life view number one. I'm using my time, possessions, friendships, activities, and reaction to life the best to live the best life possible, and then sincerely applying God's directives and plan within that framework. I try to fit God in wherever possible. I'm willing to work with the church and to give to others when I can. Life view number one. Let's go to life view number two. I am living with the sole purpose of accomplishing God's plan with zeal and fervency, understanding fully that I am only a pilgrim and a stranger and no friend to this old world. I am intent on maximizing every opportunity to share the love of God and His saving plan of salvation with those who I meet who are headed for a Christless eternity. My time, my possessions, my friendships, my activities, my recreation, and resources are used to support and pursue that goal. Again, to be honest, it is so easy to get involved with the good things of life, trying to accomplish and get done what needs to be accomplished, that sometimes I forget why I'm here and find myself in life view number one. There are opportunities I overlook because I'm focused on what I'm doing. You know, we sing, "I need thee every hour," with our lips and mind, but turn around and take off on our own for days at a time. We sing, "I'd rather have Jesus than anything this world affords today," yet immerse ourselves in things and try to fit Jesus in when we have time. Shouldn't I rather invite him to share each moment, making the necessary temporal duties a part of his plan for my life? You know, it's so easy for prosperity and things to undermine the real purpose we are on earth. Life is like one big, continuous candy peanuts scramble. Did you ever watch that? It's interesting. I enjoy watching the children scramble around, pick up all the goodies. What do you think children pick up first in a candy peanut scramble? Candy, of course. It appeals more to the taste. It's sweet. It's exciting. It makes them feel good. Peanuts, on the other hand, are in shells that need to be broken open. And it takes time and effort to eat peanuts. Besides, they're plain, they're ordinary, and they're certainly not tantalizing to the taste buds. What do you think has the most lasting value for the children who eat their newfound fortune of goodies? How much nutritional value is in candy? Depending upon the type of candy, it contains mostly white refined sugar. Our body needs carbohydrates, but studies abound warning us that too much sugar can be harmful to our health. Peanuts, on the other hand, contain protein, fiber, potassium, calcium, iron, and some fat. It's fairly obvious that peanuts have more lasting nutritional value. Yet, on occasion, I have seen children leaving the peanuts laying on the ground, some smashed and destroyed in their mad rush to fill their bags with candy. It's not only children. In many ways, adults have a child's mentality. We scramble and grab up all the candy treasures of this old world that we can accumulate, filling our bags to the brim, spending our time and energy with earthly pursuits. All the while, the treasures that last for time and eternity are left mostly untouched or even smashed and destroyed in our mad rush for more candy, treasure, and pleasure. That's our carnal nature. But it doesn't mean we have to live that way. Based on the realization that our life is uncertain, that it is brief, that we are frail creatures of dust, shouldn't that change how we live? Shouldn't we attempt to make our time, our talents, and our treasures, and our very lives count for Christ and eternity? God provides the strength we need to do that. And it, in the long run, is going to be far, far more rewarding than the candy treasures of this old world. At the time when 2017, Lord willing, will soon be history, it's good to just sit back, reflect, and purpose as we go forward in 2018 to live our lives completely for the one who gave his life for us. God bless you.
I believe each one of us can say it's been wonderful to be in God's house tonight. Again, as a brother was speaking, the year coming to an end, new year ahead of us, Lord willing. Pray for each one of you here tonight. As Brother Ken had made mention as well, I consider, there's probably only going to be 9 or 10 here tonight, and it's not going to be many. Well, Lord bless each one of you for coming tonight. It's been encouragement to me to see each one of you. Lord bless you as we close out another year. Shall we stand for closing prayer?